Oil's strengthening grip on the American presidency. The man in the White House from 1953 to 1961, former general and World War II Allied Supreme Commander Dwight D. Eisenhower, provided an early hint of the accession to come. He had been born in oil country, Denison, in north central Texas, although he grew up in eastern Kansas. The 34th president was also a lifelong advocate of the internal combustion engine. As a young Army officer who had earlier commanded a tank training unit, Eisenhower helped to lead a mid-1919 Washington to California motorcade of some 81 cars, trucks, mobile repair shops, and motorcycles. Partly funded by Willys, Packard, Mack, and General Motors, some of whose test vehicles came along, the expedition's purpose was to display the growing prowess of motor transport and publicize the need for two-lane highways. Indeed, records showed that poor roads limited the convoy to an average of 58 miles per day and an average speed of 6 miles per hour. But millions of voters and politicians were impressed. 33 years later, as the 1952 Republican presidential nominee, Eisenhower swept all the southern oil centers from West Texas to the Mississippi River Delta, the first GOP candidate to do so. Once in office, he followed through on his campaign promise to support the jurisdictional claims of California and the Gulf Coast states to offshore or tidelands oil. Most fitting of all, he presided over the massive expansion of America's post-war interstate highway program, now officially the Dwight D. Eisenhower Interstate Highway System. Among his cabinet appointees were a Texas oil executive, Robert B. Anderson, as Secretary of the Treasury, and a Detroit Automobile Company president, Engine Charlie Wilson of General Motors, as Secretary of Defense. The new National Party politics of oil was beginning to cohere. Even so, the regional split, a typical Texas executive, for example, cast Republican ballots at the national level but supported local Democrats for Congress, would stick until the 1960s, when Richard Nixon, Eisenhower's vice president, sought to complete the transformation. He had narrowly lost Texas in his first presidential race in 1960 because of the home state muscle of Lyndon Johnson as the vice presidential nominee. Then he finished slightly short again in 1968, although winning nationally. Like much of the press, Nixon credited the influence of the retiring Texas Democratic president, as well as the state-level exertions of Johnson's longtime chief lieutenant, John B. Connally, then Texas's popular Democratic governor. Between them, Johnson and Connally had close ties to most of the state's oil-connected power brokers: Clint Murchison, the Richardson-Bass family, George Brown, and many others. To co-opt this element, realignment was needed, and Nixon reached the White House with a prairie-sized complex about Texas. Nixon had an oil state childhood himself, the makings of a classic love-hate relationship. Biographers have emphasized his campaign contributions dating back to the 1940s from oil forces such as the reclusive Howard Hughes, Standard Oil of California, SoCal, and Los Angeles-based Union Oil. However, the 37th president was also personally molded by an oil boom. In the rich eastern fields of the Los Angeles Basin of the 1920s, much like the roaring milieu that had bred the Texas Democrats, few other Republican politicians could say the same. Some background is in order. In 1903, California overtook Texas as the nation's leading oil producer, and it was to do so again several times during the 1910s and the 1920s. In 1919, Nixon's father, Frank, left his unsuccessful Lemon Grove and for several years worked as a roustabout for Union Oil. In 1921, Union struck the huge Santa Fe Springs find near the Nixon family homes in Yorba Linda and later Whittier. Before long, Santa Fe Springs and two other fields in the Los Angeles Basin, Signal Hill and Huntington Beach, had again pushed California ahead of Texas. Booming Los Angeles became the world's biggest oil port, while related traffic through the Panama Canal boomed. In his everyday travels, the young Nixon would have whiffed occasional oil and gas fumes, and locally that smell connoted oil Dorado. In 1924, when Nixon was 11, oil surpassed agriculture as the state's leading industry. By itself, the Los Angeles Basin that year produced 230 million barrels of crude oil and 300 billion cubic feet of natural gas. Not far from Nixon's home, an overenthusiastic developer named a subdivision Petroleum Gardens. "The nearest gushers and pumps," wrote one chronicler, "could sometimes be heard from Yorba Linda, an audible drum of prosperity and sometimes sudden riches thumping over the quiet tract with its struggling or aborted lemon groves. Like the citrus Gold Coast, oil seemed a miracle within ordinary reach." Though oil was never discovered on the hill, both Nixon's mother Hannah and Richard would tell writers that a strike had come after they left, and that the family might have been wealthy. Instead, the 1920s in-crowd at Whittier High School, teenagers whose Hacienda Country Club parents represented minor Santa Fe Springs oil money, paid little attention to the awkward outsider who carried away the memory.